From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Cutting someone off on the road, tailgating, weaving through traffic, these are all aggressive driving behaviors, and while Bay Area drivers have a lot to be frustrated about, the region ranks third worst for traffic congestion in the nation, recent studies suggest aggressive driving is on the rise nationwide. We'll discuss road rage, how to avoid it, and what to do if it escalates. And we want to hear from you, our listeners. How do you cope with gridlock? And what driving behaviors do you find most irritating? It's coming up next. Stay with us. Welcome to Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. Purposeful tailgating, angry gestures, honking, these are all considered aggressive acts, and there's evidence that drivers are increasingly resorting to these types of behaviors on the road. In its most recent study, the AAA Foundation for Traffic Safety found that close to 80% of U.S. drivers said they'd engaged in aggressive driving over the past year, and two-thirds of drivers felt aggressive driving was on the rise. We're going to talk this hour with experts about road rage, what it is, how to avoid it, and we want to hear from you. Have you been the victim or perpetrator of road rage? Let me give you the phone number. You might want to jot it down if you want to join us by phone. It's 866-733-6786. Again, the number to call, 866-733-6786. And, of course, there are other ways you can join the program by emailing us, forum at kqed.org, or going to our website, kqed.org/forum, or tweeting us. Our Twitter handle is at kqedforum. Let me tell you who's joining us for the hour. John Marino is here. He's spokesperson for AAA of Northern California. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Glad to have you. And we also have Bob Nemirovsky with us, clinical psychologist who has a practice in Marin County and is an expert on the subject of aggressive driving and road rage. Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Glad to have you, and also glad to have Stanley Roberts, who many of you have seen on Channel 4. KRON-TV is a reporter and creator of the People Behaving Badly news segment. Welcome, Stanley Roberts.
Thank you, and thank you for having me as well.
Glad to have all of you aboard. And let me begin, John Marino, with you and find out about this AAA study, because it's pretty alarming when you get up into 80% and those sorts of numbers from the Traffic Safety Foundation. You've been studying the issue for how long?
So really, AAA prides itself on being a leading advocate for motorists and travelers, and we've done that for over 100 years since our beginning. And really, the foundation of our advocacy is based on traffic safety. So we're constantly conducting research and public surveys to help us gain kind of a better understanding of the current conditions of traffic safety and how we can help keep people safe when traveling. So it's no secret that deadly incidents of road rage have surged nationwide. Statistics from the National Highway Transportation Safety Administration showed a 600% increase in deadly road rage incidents over a 10-year period from 2006 to 2015. So from AAA's perspective, we really wanted to learn more about the prevalence of aggressive driving behaviors that are happening on American roadways. And AAA really wanted this study to help bring awareness to these issues and give drivers a better understanding of how to avoid the potential negative consequences that can come from it.
Negative consequences can be lethal. I mean, you know, that's the most astonishing thing about this report. You've got people going after other people with guns, obviously, but also with blackjacks and tire irons and all the rest of those sorts of things. There's a regional difference, though. The Northeast, it's heavier, isn't it?
There is a compelling difference that 3 times more likely to display aggressive driving behavior is happening in the Northeast. When we look at the other regions across the United States, there really wasn't much of a difference. But particularly when it came to yelling or displaying gestures of anger, there was a concentration in the Northeast.
And there's also a difference in gender and in age, a demographic. Most of these are young males who get into these kind of situations, aren't they?
Yes, male and young drivers aged 19 to 39 were significantly more likely to engage in aggressive driving behaviors, and they were 3 times more likely to actually exit their vehicle and confront another driver.
And what do we find are the most catalysts? I mean, you've got congestion and gridlock, certainly, and delays that get people upset sitting alone in their car and obviously stewing and going through all sorts of anxieties and everything. But you've also got horn honking and cutting off and the sort of things that tailgating. I mean, there's a whole range of things. What's right at the top? Do we know?
So what we did with this study is we wanted to really look at some common behaviors that happen with aggressive driving and that can ultimately lead to road rage. So we brought down kind of the 8 most prevalent topics. That would be purposefully tailgating another vehicle, actually yelling at another driver, honking to show annoyance or anger at another driver, making angry gestures like pounding your fist or the middle finger that comes out, or trying to block another vehicle from changing lanes, cutting off another vehicle on purpose. And then there's more, you know, extreme behaviors like getting out of your vehicle to confront another driver or intentionally bumping or ramping another vehicle on purpose. So when we looked at those kind of 8 broader categories, we found that, you know, under the umbrella of aggressive driving, it's actually an extremely common occurrence among U.S. drivers. 80% of the drivers in this survey say that they expressed significant anger or aggression or even road rage. Now, while that may be a common thing to experience frustration while on the roadways, we have to make sure that these common behaviors don't multiply on themselves and ultimately end up to something more serious like road rage that can potentially be more dangerous, bring out violent acts, or even lethal consequences.
John Marino here in studio with us is a spokesperson for AAA of Northern California. Bob Nemirovsky is a clinical psychologist practicing in Marin County, and you've been seeing a lot of road rage, at least labeled as road rage. In fact, the label road rage goes back to a Southern California radio station, I believe, doesn't it?
You know, right, exactly. In 1987, a couple reporters on KTLA were trying to come up with some sort of a phrase to describe what had been going on the roads in L.A. 86, 87, as well as Houston and Dallas. And there was a particular case in 87 in which, unfortunately, a child was killed due to, I think it was a shooting on the 405.
Let me talk with you, though, about how people who have this kind of anger, and some of it is generated in the automobile, as I said. You know, I know there have been studies that say people are alone and they're, it's like trolls on the internet. You know, there's nobody there to necessarily guide them or whatever. But a lot of these people have serious anger issues to begin with, don't they?
I think we all potentially do. I think focusing on the violent perpetrators and the folks with the tire irons and all that, I think it's a mistake, to be honest. I think it's titillating for the media and for the public. I do think it's a serious problem if people are getting violent on the roads. But I think there, you know, my dissertation study that I did in my doctoral program was really on the rest of us, the people that aren't going to get out of the car, the people that are not carrying weapons.
They're stewing or making their fists clench.
Exactly, yeah. There's a lot of driving anger out there, and I think that we all have a responsibility to certainly not let it escalate, like John was saying. But I think we can also find ways to de-escalate ourselves and avoid, you know, getting into violent confrontations or frankly, you know, honking our horn or flashing our lights at someone that turns out maybe they do have a tire iron with them and maybe they are violent.
Well, let's talk about de-escalating within the self, for example, because, you know, you can honk at somebody and you can wind up without willing it in a pretty serious confrontation, as you're suggesting. But there's a line between thinking these kinds of things, like I'm going to honk the horn, and then simply putting a kibosh on it, not doing it. And that's where psychology can come in and perhaps help people.
Absolutely. I mean, I think that it actually, you can roll it back to before you even get in the car. I mean, I think it can be helpful for the average person to think about what kind of stress level they are carrying getting into the vehicle, what's going on at home, what's going on at work, what is actually stewing for them. I use with my clients the metaphor of kindling, like kindling, building up a fire. Just kind of get a sense of how stressed you are out in general or on the particular day. Get in the car, take a couple deep breaths. Don't be surprised when there are people behaving badly. And, you know, do the best to stay calm and not overreact. So, yes, we're all going to be frustrated. I had my share of it just getting across San Francisco to your studio today. I'm
sorry,
not impervious.
About that.
But, you know, there's a certain amount of doing a little bit of just literally breathing, kind of getting a sense that, you know, your
deep breaths, that
deep
kind of
breath
thing?
Is excellent. I think, you know, no offense to talk radio, but you might want to be thinking about listening to some calming music or pick the right radio station,
hey,
I guess.
People tell me my voice is soothing. So
I think yours is soothing.
Just heard that again. There's
actually some studies out there that say that, you know, make sure your car is comfortable and make sure your seat's aligned and make sure if it's summertime, you've got the AC on and that kind of a thing. But I think in general, getting yourself in the vehicle, knowing what's going on for you, and not being overly surprised when somebody is on their phone or something like that. You're certainly allowed to get a little angry, but recognize that it does nobody any good to act on it.
This is more, by the way, the studies show where women become involved in road rage. I mean, they're way overshadowed disproportionately by men, but they don't like somebody's. Isn't this true, I think, Jeff, that John, excuse me, that there's somebody sitting on a phone or texting and they get angry about these kinds of things?
You know, the advent of technology in the car has really not only made us more distracted drivers, it's really made us more worse at driving, right? We're constantly looking at our phones. Distracted driving is almost, if not more dangerous than drunk driving.
It's much more dangerous. It's also much more incendiary where road rage is concerned. You see somebody texting and so forth, and you get angry.
Exactly. You can easily see someone next to you driving that's talking on their phone or texting on their phone. You don't necessarily see someone, you know, openly drinking alcohol while driving on the road. It's something much more commonly seen. And that kind of action, we seem to be so much more intolerant of other people making mistakes while driving, but us ourselves. I mean, how often do normal people tend to check their phone while they're driving? I mean, these numbers are certainly compelling, but it is interesting how we seem to be more intolerant of other people doing the same actions that we ourselves often do.
Well, what is it better to do psychologically, Bob, to let something like that go and just say, forget it, I'm going to divert my thoughts here, or somebody's texting, I'm going to call the cops? I mean, that would be a natural impulse for many people too, right?
Yeah, that's absolutely an option to call law enforcement if someone is driving in a way that's dangerous.
But the weaving between lanes, all those kinds of things that get people crazy.
Yeah. Sure. I mean, I think that the real source of most people's driving anger can be put into a couple different categories. I mean, I think if someone is driving in a dangerous or aggressive way, it's very likely that you are feeling threatened. And as soon as a human being feels threatened, their nervous system starts to go into fight, flight, or freeze mode. So we start getting, you know, the blood starts flowing, the temperature starts going up. There's a lot of biological things that start happening.
Lots of adrenaline, too. Yeah.
Exactly. Adrenaline's a big part of it. I think another trigger for folks in my study was this idea of injustice and things being unfair. So, you know, you could be in the fast lane and wanting to go 70 miles an hour. And if someone is going 64 miles an hour in the fast lane, people tend to get upset. Even though the person that's going 64 is not breaking the law, they're kind of violating some sort of unwritten law that you stay out of the left lane unless you're going to go fast. So that's the second category that I've noticed that people react to, you know, issues of justice and issues of equality. And the third category that I've noticed a lot is just, it sounds pretty straightforward, but it's not. It's the issue of frustration. You're trying to get from point A to point B. You're trying to get something accomplished. You're trying to get a need met. And all of that is being interrupted, slowed down, or thwarted by those gosh darn other drivers on the road.
Well, let's get Stanley Robertson to this, reporter and creator of People Behaving Badly, which is a new segment on KRON Channel 4. And you've observed a lot of this, Stanley. But let's break it down a little bit, because a lot of it seems to have to do with what kind of transportation people are operating. I mean, you've got battles between drivers of automobiles, because we're not at self-driving cars yet, and bicyclists or cyclists, motorcycles and so forth, and pedestrians. I mean, that's kind of often the division here, isn't it?
Yeah, people tend to think that road rage is particularly a person driving a motor vehicle. But what I found is that it actually deals with people on foot, people in cars, and people on bicycles. The cars think the bicyclists don't have the road, right to use the road. The bicyclists think they have the right to use the entire road. And pedestrians, I think they're stuck in the middle because sometimes they can't cross the street because there are so many cars going by that aren't giving them a chance to cross. And then the other way around, the drivers think that they can't cross because pedestrians are everywhere. So then everybody gets mad at everybody, and the next thing you know, there's a fight that breaks out. And people think that, well, there's so much more road rage now. But the way I see it is there's more social media to document the road rage. So as more people take video of people acting out or behaving badly, then you start to see more of it. And the perception is that, oh, my God, it's a whole lot more than it was before.
That's an excellent point. In fact, there was a case, Bob's practice as a psychologist is in Ross, a case of a guy with a cyclist. And he said, I want to get you bastards off the road. He said, I got my shotgun. I'm going to let you know. That guy was behaving egregiously. He went through anger management and actually had no consequences, which seems to me to be another issue that we ought to look at here. But that whole thing about, you know, this is my road. It's not yours as a cyclist.
Well, one of the things, and moving
and by
back,
the way, excuse me, I was just going to add to that. The guy said, took out his camera and said, you're on candid camera, to the guy, you know, who was causing all this commotion.
You know, actually, by taking out your camera sometimes, it actually contributes to the rage.
Sure.
Because now you're not only are you saying that, hey, you're being bad, I'm going to record you being bad, and I'm going to show it to everybody else. So then it exacerbates the issue. But one of the things I find is I call the blinker effect. And what is the blinker effect? It's when you put your blinker on and the guy behind you speeds up so that you can't change lanes. And then he rides and looks straight ahead so he can't see you, as if I don't see you, you don't exist. And that will upset someone. I mean, it upsets me sometimes.
Didn't you also have one of those incidents that you got on video of a guy getting out and kicking this bicyclist's bicycle and going into a rage?
Yeah, that was actually, we aired that video a while back, and it was a gentleman that I guess he was in a, I think it was a minivan of some sort, and him and the bicyclist got into it. And the bicyclist had a helmet cam, so I guess it recorded the entire event. And we aired that on TV, and it's just normal to now see people fight each other over, you know, something that we, none of us actually had the right to fight over.
Well, we got lots of people who want to weigh in here with calls, and let me begin taking some of those. And we'll begin, Jacob from Menlo Park, with you. Good morning.
Good morning. I'm a full-time Uber driver, so I've pretty much seen it all. And one thing that I get just about every day is I get riders who are late for work, and they think they're going to be penalized for being late to work. And I think this is a big contributor. And I just want to say, if there's any employers listening, to expect your employee to be there at the strike of the hour at 8 o'clock in the morning through Bay Area traffic, it's just not going to happen.
But you get pressured by your passengers to go at high speeds, huh?
I do, most definitely, most definitely. You know, very stressful.
I always tell people this.
Stanley Roberts.
If you're late for work, speeding isn't going to make you any less later. You're still going to be late.
You may be even more late if you get stopped by the police, too.
Yes.
Which is a possibility. Bob Nemirovsky.
Well, and I think the caller is bringing in a very, very important idea around one of the top pressures that people have, and that's time. You know, time pressure, and I think that that puts you in a very stressful situation. And maybe you're not afraid of the other driver, but you're afraid of your boss in this situation. And that gets you anxious, and it gets you more primed and more prone to react in a more serious way.
And we'll bring some more callers on. Let me go to San Leandro. And Michael, you're on the air.
Yes, good morning.
Morning.
Real quick, I'd like to make a comment. I work on the freeway system. I'm a highway maintenance worker in the Bay Area. And I would just like to remind people in the Bay Area, we know you're frustrated with the construction, the road work, the traffic congestion in general. But there is a state law to slow down and move over for maintenance personnel or highway patrol. Three highway patrol have been struck in the last month alone. And, for example, when we worked last weekend on 880 in Oakland, I can't believe when we have three lanes closed, so there's one lane of traffic, people are still driving 70, 80 miles an hour next to workers that are on foot. And this isn't even, you know, to mention that the people driving intoxicated and possibly high now with the marijuana legalization. Our lives are out there. We have families. We're working people. We're on the freeway. Please, please be cautious. Think about that next drink you're going to have at 2 in the morning, 3 in the morning, and you're going to drive through a work zone. It happened this past weekend. So I'd just like to make that comment.
Well, I appreciate it. It's an important caveat, Michael, and I thank you for bringing it up to listeners and letting them hear your concerns. They're deeply concerned, things to be deeply concerned about. Let me read some comments, because we asked listeners what's the most annoying thing people do on the roads. Let me just give you some sampling of responses. Abigail says, texting while driving. Every time I drive from Oakland to San Jose, there's at least one idiot weaving all over the place with their face and their phone at 70 miles per hour. That's how people die. Guy writes, Uber and Lyft drivers who double park to pick up and drop off passengers. I honk. That's all you can do because you'll grow old waiting for the city to do something. And here's Kathy, who says, people sitting in the passing lane, unless you're overtaking, you should be in the right lane. And let me get more callers on here, and you can add your voice to this by emailing us, forum@kqed.org. Here's a Cupertino caller, Hema. Good morning.
Hello. So I encountered road rage last year, and this driver cut many cars and went around me and zoomed past me. And then I noticed that he was really going to the same office building where I was heading. I was just fuming, and I just decided I'm going to watch what this person is going to do next. So as I'm driving into the parking lot, I see this person stop, get out from his car, And he ran to the restroom. And my anger turned into laughter. I'm like, oh, my God, this fellow really wanted to use the restroom. And that's why he was rushing through this maze like this. So now anytime I see a person with road rage zooming past, I just smile and say, maybe he just wants to go to the restroom.
Yeah, that's a good story. And let me just add something to that, because I've actually talked on the air about times when I got cut off and honked and got the finger, and my proletarian blood started acting up, and I wanted to pursue, but I managed to show some self-restraint and maturity, which I hope as I get older even becomes more evident. But the reality is there was some guy that by accident I cut off, and he blocked me, and he got out of his car, and I knew I was in the wrong, and I just shrugged my shoulders and I said, I'm sorry, and that was it. He got back in his car and he left.
You're putting your hands up in the international sign of I'm sorry I screwed up.
Yeah, well, I mean, some people, that's all they want to hear, because they're feeling injustice has been done to them or something along those lines. Yeah, Bob, you were going to say something.
Well, I appreciate what the caller was bringing in, that the I have a top 10 ways to avoid road rage list. It's on my website, and if there's time later, we can go over it. But one of the most important ones the caller brought up, which is humor. It's almost biologically impossible to be furious and laughing at the same time. So if you can make a joke in your head about the other driver that's maybe annoying you or frustrating you, whatever it is, they have to go to the bathroom, they have to go get their hair done because it's a mess, whatever it is, it's an okay time, particularly the privacy of your car, to say whatever you want, to just make fun of the other driver. And if you get a chuckle out of it, you're doing yourself and everybody a good deed, because you're lowering your threat feeling and you're lowering your nervous system to the point that everything's going to be safer.
Well, we'll get your top 10 list on our website, too. You were going to add something, John Marino?
Yeah, I think the caller brings up a really interesting point in that we often don't know what's going on in the life or in the mind of the fellow drivers on the road. I've recently been, I rediscovered Seinfeld, the TV show, and there's a classic episode in when George is driving and someone gives him the finger, and he's so enraged by this that he follows that driver for the whole night, and to the point where he finds him at the gas station, and it turns out the driver just had his arm broken. And when he did the wave outside, it made it look as if he was giving him the middle finger. Yeah, I think this is a funny anecdote to show that we often don't know the intention behind the maneuvers of other drivers on the road, and a little bit of understanding can likely go a long way.
Empathy and slack don't necessarily hurt one in this. Stanley Roberts.
So my daughter laughs at me. I have a 14-year-old, and she laughs at me because when someone lets me over, I wave and I say, thank you. And she goes, well, why are you saying thank you? They can't hear you. And I said, yes, but me waving and saying thank you is a reassurance that I'm actually saying, hey, I appreciate the fact that you allowed me to come over, because you could have easily been a jerk and not, but you did. And I thank you for that. So and sometimes if you look in your mirror, you'll see them wave back, which is a good thing. That means that, hey, we've established communication, and it's not the bird. It's just thank you very much.
It's a little bit annoying sometimes when you give people the right of way and they don't give you a wave. I've felt that way. I don't know. Probably many people can relate to that. It seems like just general courtesy, but we'll get into some of these other issues. And again, we're talking about road rage on the rise. Honk if you agree. No, I'm not talking to callers. I don't want to get your attention away from what you have on your vision on the road. In fact, if you're thinking about calling us on your phone, maybe think twice, unless you've got one of those kind of phones. We've got Bob Nemirovsky with us, Stanley Roberts, John Marino. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. We're talking this hour about road rage, which is on the rise. A AAA study shows that about 80% of people out there have had incidents, and we're hearing about some of those incidents. Let me read something that Katie writes. She says, last year at about 7 a.m. on 580, I was hit by an object. The guy was upset because, in his opinion, I was going too slow. I got over as soon as I could, but he stalked me in his car and waited by the ramp going to Oakland on 580. When he saw I wasn't going that way, he sped toward me, got in front and slammed his brakes. Then he pulled up next to me, flipped me off, and threw something. I called the police, but I didn't have a plate, so there was nothing they could do. There's another listener who says, I found many drivers don't recognize bicyclists, as something Stanley Roberts was saying before, as legitimate users of the road. They view bike lanes as just another place to drive and park. Having impulsive, emotionally driven people controlling such dangerous machines is a bad system. I now carry a can of combination tear gas, pepper spray for the heated arguments I get into. Bring on the self-driving cars. Okay, and here's Eric, who says, I wonder if telecommuting and flexible schedules could help lower the stress that results in aggressive driving. I noticed a difference when I did some telecommuting. Thoughts on that, John Marino?
Yeah, the interesting thing there is the rise of autonomous vehicles and self-driving cars. This technology is so uniquely poised to drastically reduce the average stressors that cause the escalated incidents of road rage.
Still a number of years away, though.
It might be here faster than you think.
Yeah. Well, telecommuting probably, in general, would lower the decimal level of rage, I would presume, wouldn't it?
I think that's fair to say. That's what the listener
is asking. And Bob, do you want to talk a little bit about on-road versus off-road?
Well, absolutely. I mean, I think that, you know, when we are, for example, running into a Starbucks to get a coffee or Pete's Coffee, which is actually my preference, and I'm not sponsored, by the way, you know, we follow certain forms and structures of common civility. There's a certain orderliness to it. You know, we may be, you know, hold the door for somebody, or maybe we go. That's fine. But, you know, there's a line and there's a place where it starts. And if someone cuts you in line, you know, in a Starbucks, you might be a little frustrated, but you're standing right there. And you're certainly under a certain amount of conscious or unconscious pressure to behave in a civil way. So you might tap the person on the shoulder and say, excuse me, I was in line first. And they might say, oh, well, I was, or go ahead. But there's a way where you can discuss it. And there's a way that you can resolve the conflict. And there's also like eyes are on you. But on the road, a lot of this is not there. There's nobody really watching you. There's sort of this myth or this feeling that you are anonymous. When you are in a high-speed vehicle, you can get away quickly. So a lot of folks assume that they can't get caught or can't get punished or there's no retribution possible. But I think there's a lot of failures of sort of normal civility and social pressures to behave in a pro-social way. So when you're on the road, I think, unfortunately, I hate to say this, but I think a lot of folks just let their sort of core id, their sort of core animalistic urges come forward because there's not a check on them like there is when you're in line at a coffee shop.
I'm all for civility as opposed to primal behavior, so thank you for that. Here's Steve who says, if distracted driving is as dangerous as drunk driving, why are the penalties not equal? Penalties for distracted driving are much more lenient. I think that's also an important point. Let's go to some callers. David, you're on the air. Good morning.
Yes, good morning. I hold public officials and law enforcement responsible for a lot of this. They should take a 25-mile-an-hour speed limit sign to every public meeting and remind everyone there the speed limit is 25 miles an hour in business and residential districts unless otherwise posted. They don't do that. They should even give the signs. They don't have to carry the big heavy metal ones, but they could produce smaller ones made out of cardboard. They could even roll up and then put them on the dais or wherever they're talking from, a lectern, and say, folks, look, this is the law in California. Secondly, I think that a jurisdiction should produce pledges. I'm looking at a pledge. I Googled safe driving pledges. I'm looking one here from Garden City High School, and it says that students take the pledge. I will always obey the speed limits and all the traffic signs. I agree not to text or use my telephone while driving. These pledges should be produced by government officials throughout the state, throughout the nation, and taken to public meetings and pass them out and say, look, this is your responsibility as a good citizen, as a law-abiding citizen, and as a safe driver. And most importantly, there should be a pledge to leave 15, 20, 30 minutes early. You cannot get across San Francisco in 5 minutes. And people need to take the pledge to leave early so they can drive the speed limit and get to their destination safely and paying attention 100% to the roadway, pedestrians, crosswalks, et cetera.
All right, David, I thank you for that call. And Stanley Roberts, he's bringing up the whole question not only of responsibility of law enforcement, you got your badge on your hat here, but also responsibility of citizens.
You know, no one thinks about the pedestrian until they're actually a pedestrian. So when you're in your car, the pedestrian is nothing you think of. But when you are a pedestrian, you wonder, why is no one paying attention to what I'm doing? Why are you not letting me cross? So, and the same thing with law enforcement and with driving. If you have a driver's license, you've signed an affidavit stating that you are going to abide by the rules of the road. You know that when you took that test and you took that driver's license and you got your driver's license. So the police, their job is to enforce, to go out there and tell you, hey, okay, you know better, and this is what's going to happen. They have to what's the word I'm looking for? It's educate, engineering, and enforcement. And so, yes, the education part is to go out and say, this is the speed limit, don't do it. But there are signs everywhere to tell you, follow the speed limit. And then the education part is, the enforcement is they write the tickets. If you don't follow those rules, and if you're speeding and you're texting and you're driving. And yes, I do believe that the texting and driving laws should be harder and harsher because people just don't care. I can go to any intersection right now and show you 20 people texting behind the wheel of their car at any given day.
Yeah, the AAA agrees with the AAA that we just heard Stanley cite here, I presume.
Yeah, absolutely. The reality is if you look at across America, a lot of states, it's much more difficult to advocate for those type of laws. In Arizona, for example, we just passed last year the first teen texting ban in Arizona, and that took 10 years.
Only teen texting?
Only teen texting. Still not full-blown texting ban, but it took 10 years just for that iterative change. I think another important thing that the caller was talking about was speeding, and I think we should probably define the difference between aggressive driving and road rage. Road rage is just a small subset of an overarching concept known as aggressive driving. Aggressive driving is defined as like any unsafe driving behavior performed deliberately with a disregard for safety. So that could be speeding, running a red light, high beaming someone, brake checking someone, tailgating. Now, these are what our study found is that they're much more commonly done. At least one person has done those at least once in the past year. The problem is when those actions get a little bit more aggressive and ends up becoming full-blown road rage, which is throwing objects at a car, sideswiping, exiting to confront someone on the road. And the important thing to know is that aggressive driving and road rage are factors in up to 56% of fatal accidents that occur.
And they all have underlying connections, unfortunately, to culture and to the kind of culture of many instances, machismo and, you know, proving oneself right and all the rest of that. You've been talking about pedestrians here. Tom writes, I experienced a moment of pedestrian road rage this morning that found me throwing a soccer ball at a passing car that just ran through a stop sign. This is a trigger point for me, as the stop sign in my neighborhood is frequently ignored. The driver looked confused but kept on going. Will writes, do your guests think the anger that leads to road rage is also present outside of the car? It seems like many adults feel anger is an appropriate response to being inconvenienced. Bob, you find that, don't you, with your patients?
Yes, I do. I think inconvenience, as I was saying earlier, also threat, issues of injustice. And, you know, there's layers of it surrounding us in our culture, particularly in 2018. I think people are very, very sensitive to the behaviors of others.
I mentioned machismo, but a lot of it's impatience in the culture, too.
Yeah, I agree. I think impatience is important. We talked about the time pressure that people are under. But I think people are, to a certain extent, very oblivious at times of how getting their needs met or getting from their point A to point B may be impacting others.
We'll bring on some more of our callers. Let me go next to you, Paulette. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. It's sure. Interesting in follow-up to your comment about culture and machismo. As a woman and having two adult daughters, I have sadly too often experienced very aggressive driving, almost always from men, and had to also suffer some of the most foul language any person would ever want to hear, but particularly a woman. And if I have just a second, I'd like to kind of add on an up note and tell you a very brief story. My daughter was driving down the freeway, and her very large boyfriend had his seat pulled back on the passenger side, napping. And she started experiencing this type of aggressive driving with the language, the flipping, all that stuff. And very slowly, her boyfriend rolled down the window and slowly brought his chair up and sort of got up and showed his full size and sort of hung out the window a little bit and said, pull over. And that ended the confrontation on the freeway. And I thought, wow, don't we all wish we could kind of have that in that moment?
Yeah, good story.
But it's just it's a very uncomfortable thing, and it's I've been experiencing it as well as other women, not just in this traffic, but for many, many, many years.
Oh,
nothing
thank you for that
much
call,
you can
Paulette.
Do about it.
But never assume, by the way, that some of these people are cowards, because some of them do have, they're packing a pistol, or you just never know what you're dealing with. Always keep that in mind. It was a good story, though. I appreciate it. And let me get some more callers on. John from Alameda, you're on.
Good morning. It's interesting to listen to this. And first, my observation is a lot of people have what I call a pre-Capernaum understanding of the nature of the universe, that there is the center of it, and that's where the part of the problem comes from. But my story is from Saturday, January 12th at about 10 o'clock. I was with a Team Alameda bike ride. About 12 of us were headed up Claremont towards Old Tunnel Road. And I was demonstrating the proper clearance from parked cars, being out about 6 feet from the parked cars on Claremont after turning right off of College. And a woman in a gray SUV pulled up behind me, was 5 or 10 feet off my rear wheel, and she laid on the horn. She slowed down, and she stayed there. Because I had witnesses and because I knew I was in the right, being a lead cycling instructor and having studied this a lot, I knew I was okay and had the right to the road. There was a clear left lane immediately to her left she could have used, but she stayed there between 30 seconds and a minute, laying on the horn the entire time. And eventually, after my ears were pretty well fried, she pulled around and, of course, raised her middle digit. And the people I was riding with reported there was a lift sticker on her SUV. I don't know why she was in such a hurry or so upset that I happened to be on the road. I was brightly lit, wearing yellow neon and all kinds of other things, so it was not like I could not be seen. And it was an interesting experiment. I knew that either my estate or my attorney could collect if she actually made contact, so I stayed my ground. And I stayed in the lane where I was in the right position. But it was pretty astounding to have that experience.
Sounds like it was harrowing, too. I'm sorry.
It was.
Sorry you had to go through that. But I appreciate you letting us know and giving us the narration here. Thank you for that call, John. And Linda asked the question again, and this is to you, John Moreno. Are most road ragers men? Well, we said that they definitely are, but this was a woman in the story that we just heard. Any idea, Linda, our listener wants to know about the percentages?
Yeah, so what we found is that, again, male drivers are much more significantly likely to engage in aggressive behaviors, and in fact, 3 times more likely to exit their vehicle. From what we found, I mean, although 80% of all drivers say they've expressed some form of this anger, it does seem that the more aggressive angers are heavier skewed towards young male drivers.
There's another question of importance here. Let me go to you, Bob Nemirovsky. Rich writes, I'm curious to know what impact seeing another driver as the other has on road rage. If I see someone with a different political sticker than me, for example, or if they're a different gender, race, age, etc.?
I think it's a really big factor. You know, people have an amazing ability to sum up other people's lives, even though they're in, you know, another automobile. I do think that bumper stickers, there's some research showing that bumper sticker, actually quantity of bumper stickers can be a correlation to how offensive people find that person's car. There's certainly, you know, all sorts of factors of differences in different people. But I think that the thing that concerns me is that I think there's a sort of a tendency when there is like maybe some bad behavior going on the road, nothing violent or aggressive, you know, so far, that some drivers tend to denigrate the other driver in their mind. And what they're doing is they're basically making them into sort of lesser quality humans. And so the person that's having those thoughts is essentially taking they're becoming morally superior in their mind by casting the other person as morally inferior. And research has shown is when you do that, that actually sort of makes the other person sort of like less human. It's like a dehumanization that we do unconsciously, and that actually fosters anger. So if you can find more commonalities with other people, you're less likely to get sucked into that trap. So maybe you don't like their political bumper sticker or you don't like the car that they're driving. But if you're all in traffic and you're all trying to get to the same place, if you can find in your mind a way to think about the commonality between people on the road, like we're all in this together, we're all trying to get someplace, we're all just trying to get through the day, you're actually less likely to become enraged.
Here's Leslie. Leslie, thank you for waiting. You're on the air.
Hi. I've been an outside sales rep for 30 years, and what I've noticed, especially in the last 5 years, is the sheer number of increased people on the road. I mean, I feel like in San Francisco alone with the Ubers and Lyfts, it's just dramatically increased, and that's made me experience so much more aggression towards me, what I'm seeing with other drivers is driving around me, And I'd also just like to add, a pet peeve of mine is nobody uses their blinker anymore. So you'll be driving along, and all of a sudden someone will slam on their brake because someone in front of them hasn't used their blinker. So those kinds of things, with so many more people on the road, has become significant in my work.
Well, you have hit on something. I think Stanley Roberts lit up when you said that. You don't see many blinkers like you used to, do you?
Yeah, people always complain that people do not blink when they're driving. And I always laugh because I go, well, everybody blinks when they drive, but they mean using their turn signal. It was invented a long time ago, and people are too busy holding their phone in one hand and coffee in the other. We actually saw a guy one day on the freeway with a burrito in one hand and a cell phone. And we drove alongside him over the highway patrol, and he drove for a long time. So the officer asked him after he pulled him over, well, if you have a burrito and a phone, how are you signaling? How are you driving? You know, so and to address the whole thing with the stickers, people have this conception, this idea in their mind that when they see a Uber or a Lyft sticker, that they're automatically going to be a bad driver. Automatically, that means stay away from them, watch out, because they're going to either stop somewhere randomly. And in the past, you always thought when you saw a taxi cab, you kind of knew the taxi cab didn't drive good. So you knew if you saw the yellow car, you stay away from it. But now they just have the stickers, so you don't know who this person is. And they just stop randomly and double park, and it does upset people. I admit that.
I think people can get upset, too, when they see political stickers. I know. I've been both a passenger and also with people who have talked about this to me. But let me get some more callers on here. Here's Scott, who wants to talk about golf and driving etiquette. Scott, go ahead.
Yeah, there's just sort of an unwritten respect that golfers have on a golf course, where you treat people with respect and consideration. And one of the number one rules in golf when you're out there on the road or on the course, so to say, is keeping up with the group in front of you. And so if you see that you are playing slow or looking for your ball for too long a time, you see the people behind you and you're considerate of it, and you say, hey, we got to pick this pace up. We don't want to affect the play of the guys behind us. That's inconsiderate. And I think if that approach and that parallel with golf and life and those rules of etiquette was applied to the road, people would be much more forgiving and have some empathy for what's going on out there, instead of just thinking about themselves and getting from A to B.
What does that mean about giving mulligans? Sorry. Actually, Scott, I thank you for that call. And let me get some more callers on here. Peter's next. Peter, you're on.
Thank you. So I grew up and was taught to drive in the UK by my father. And there were some major principles that he taught me. And following on the last call, one was courtesy to other road users, whether they're pedestrians, cyclists, or anybody else. And another is that you can't drive through people that are in front of you, and there are going to be jerks. You have to tolerate them. When the road clears, maybe you can do something. Now, I have more than my fair share of speeding tickets, but there's only places where you can speed safely, and you can only do it when there's no risk to anybody else. But overall, I think what was the last call is about, you go faster, actually, if you work out what the traffic is doing. And, you know, I've been living in the States for 20-something years now and never had an accident. However, what I did find was interesting was that using a GPS, not for directions, but for effectively giving me an estimate of what time I would arrive at my destination, what I found out very quickly is that no matter how fast I tried to drive, actually, I got there at pretty much the same time. So, you know, I really think it's being aware of other people on the road. Predictability is huge. One of the things that I was taught, especially when on freeways and things like that, is you want to be watching the cars or the vehicles 10 vehicles ahead of you, not the one that you're following, because you can actually see what's going to happen. You can speed up, you can slow down, you can make allowances. And if people want to cut in, let them.
No, you make some good points, Peter, and I thank you for them. In fact, Jeff Marino, there are apps now that can tell you almost to the minute how late you're going to be or how on time you're going to be, et cetera. And maybe that's a good thing in terms of just not getting upset.
Oh, absolutely. I think the caller brings up a really interesting point about civility. And in California, we, you know, often pride ourselves on being, you know, a very tolerant people, open to new ideas. But when it comes to road rage, it seems that's parked to the side and how we treat each other on the roads. Just imagine a world if everyone just tried to be a little bit kinder or courteous on the road. If you would take that extra movement to let someone merge in if, you know, there's a traffic happening on the highway. And I think that could ultimately speak to a lot of other things happening in our country. If we all just made a little bit of an effort to be a little kinder to one another, we can solve a lot of the problems that face us.
Jeff Marino again is spokesperson for AAA of Northern California, and you're listening to Forum, and we're talking with Jeff as well as Bob Nemirovsky, a clinical psychologist who has a practice in Marin County that focuses on a lot of the problems we've been talking about. Stanley Roberts is a reporter and creator of the People Behaving Badly news segment for KRON4, and this is a fundraising period for KQED Public Radio. For more information about how to support KQED, go to kqed.org. And I'm going to go to another comment here from Julianne, who writes, I want to invent signals to use while driving, a signal for I'm sorry when I inadvertently cut someone off, and for thank you when a driver does something polite on the road. Let's come up with clear signals and help them go viral. Bob Nemirovsky.
Well, yeah, I mean, on the road, there's a real failure to communicate, whether you want to say to someone, hey, why don't you go, or I'm sorry, or, you know, if you're upset, hey, I'm really upset. There's actually a company, I think, in Texas that sells LED signs for the back of your window. And they come with some standard signs, which I won't repeat here. I don't think they're very helpful. But
more Texas.
More Texas. But I think you could put some nice, you know, comments in there like, you know, back off or don't tailgate, that kind of a thing. But I think, you know, really the failure to communicate is a really, really big issue on the road. And I want to also touch back to this idea that John Moreno was talking about in terms of altruism. There's a lot of research that shows that if you can get your brain into the gear of doing simple little things for other people, whether you believe in karma or not, sort of, you know, psychobiologically, you're actually going to put some savings in the bank for those days when people are testing and trying your patience. So one thing that I do, and I would actually challenge listeners to try this on their own, is when you are not in a rush, try being a little more courteous, letting people go, slowing down a little bit, and hope that on the day that you're really in a rush, that people will do the same thing for you. Sounds naive, but I think it's good for the brain.
I think these are good tips. I mean, you've been talking about being just more civil, kinder, thinking of your better angels, as Abraham Lincoln put it, and using humor and all those kinds of things. You could add one other. Is just sometimes, I think it's in your top 10, isn't it? Enjoying the scenery, looking mm-hmm. outside and, you know, while you're driving and thinking about just being in the moment as much as you can. Stanley?
I say, you know, big rig drivers have a sense of etiquette amongst themselves. So when a big rig wants to pass another big rig and they're going, they'll flash their light saying it's safe to come over. And so that's their way of communicating. Also, we can, you know, the hand gestures of waving, thumbs up, those always work because you can't communicate. You can't yell out the window on a freeway, but you can say thank you or hey, or move over if someone's behind you and want to get over, just move over for a few seconds.
Well, here's Paul, apropos of what I was saying a moment ago, who writes, I'm a commercial flatbed driver and I use the road system all day, every day. Here's what I do to deal with frustration. Just try to relax and look around you. Maybe some nice clouds, trees, maybe Mount Diablo on 680. Think of something peaceful. Bay Area driving is very stressful, so decompression after your commute is important. And Rick says, maybe drivers should be taught, as pilots are, how to do time distance calculations, apropos of what we were saying before a little bit. Most crazy driving has little effect on your arrival time unless you can gain a large difference in speed or your drive is a significant distance in miles. And let me get another caller on here, and that's Edward from Hayward. Edward, welcome.
Hi, thank you for having me. I'd like to say this is my first time calling in pretty much to a radio show. I've just started to become a listener of 88.5, and actually am starting to appreciate talk radio over music radio lately. So this topic really kind of has a sore spot with me. I do delivery vehicle delivery service in the Bay Area, and I'd probably say that I am an offender of road rage, but I also believe that I am on the other side of the fence is to where I do pay attention to my surroundings. I pay attention to the vehicles. If I am, in fact, a slower vehicle in the fast lane, I will, you know, merge over as it is, you know, kind of like an unwritten rule. I just really believe that people are in their moment. They're in their mind. So when they're driving, they're out there kind of just driving. We're all driving to go somewhere, but I don't think people are really driving. And that, you know, means like the signaling, the paying attention to, you know, your surroundings, speeding up, slowing down, you know, the common courtesy things. I just think that everybody out in the world is just driving. So if you're driving and not paying attention to your surroundings, that's where the road rage comes, because you're actually domino affecting other people's lives without really knowing it, because you're just in the moment of your driving. Does that make sense?
Yeah, an interesting thesis, Bob Nemirovsky. Just the attentiveness of driving can really help maybe ameliorate the road rage.
Absolutely. I think that one of the things that really puts people into a tizzy is when they're daydreaming or not really paying attention, and there's a large span of roadway ahead of them, and then all of a sudden someone cuts in front of them, not necessarily dangerously, but all of a sudden it just demands your attention. And I think that, you know, the old saying, own the road, like they used to do in the radio and TV commercials, I think people are over-owning the road these days.
Well, some good advice here this hour, and I thank you all, and certainly thank the listeners for the stories that you brought. There are many of you that didn't get on the air here, and I'm sorry we were backed up unbelievably. It is a subject that touches many people's lives. All you have to do is be behind the wheel. Thanks to Bob Nemirovsky. He's a clinical psychologist practicing in Marin. Thanks to John Moreno, spokesperson for AAA of Northern California. And thanks to Stanley Roberts, reporter for and creator of People Behaving Badly, a new segment on KRON Channel 4. And thanks again to you, our listeners. And for all of us here at KQED, I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.